Do you know beyond any shadow of a doubt that you are here to do something wonderful with your life? Do you feel that call deep inside you to bring your sacred healing gifts and transformational knowledge to the world around you? Do you want to feel inspired as you build your business doing your beautiful work? Do you want to learn how to build a successful spiritual business? Well then, you're invited to listen in to the Divinely Intuitive Business Radio Show, where we explore how fun and easy it can be to build a strong, abundant business while at the same time staying deeply connected to the divine using your intuition, your own sixth sense. Join the irreverent Reverend Ann Presswell as she and her guests explore the many ways you can build a deeply connected, authentic, powerful spiritual business making money without feeling like you've sold your soul. You are here to get your gifts out to the world in a powerful, abundant way, and your people are waiting for you. Let's help them find you. Now, here's your host, Reverend Ann Presswell.
Well, hello, 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 Divine Ones. I am so excited to welcome you here today to the Divinely Intuitive Business Radio Show. I'm Reverend Ann Presswell, your host of DivinelyIntuitiveBusiness.com, and I am so excited to welcome Inga Christina. This is a conversation that we're going to have today that is so powerful and so connected with pretty much every intuitive or healer that I know of, and that is how loss or trauma can catapult you into your divine work. I'm going to welcome her here in just a moment. We're going to hear this incredible story that she has. But first, I want to say hello to Elizabeth, and I want to say hello to Louisa, who's in the chat room. Hi, Louisa. I can see you're there. Louisa's my right arm, let me tell you, in my business. And Elizabeth is my right arm here in the on the radio show. So hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Reverend Anne, and hello. Big hugs to you both and to Inga and to everyone.
Yes. We had a little bit of a challenge getting Inga on right before the show. So, like, literally at about 20 seconds of... got on and everything was, I just said, all right, angels, let's bring it on in, you know, because we need your help. I want to offer a blessing and pull an angel card before we get started. So everyone taking a nice deep breath, knowing that you are here to bring your sacred work into the world. And whatever you are going through or have, wow, whatever, I don't know what that was, but it was some noise in the background. It doesn't matter. Whatever you're here to do, whatever is in your heart to do, whatever you've been taken through and or maybe are going through right now, but feeling guided that at some point you'll be bringing your work to the world, this show today will help you. It will inspire you, because when you're in the devastation of loss and the darkness, it's hard to see the light from that place. But I can promise you that there is transformation after loss, after that level of devastation. And it always moves you forward if you allow it to, if you find yourself in that space. So today, just enjoy this show and listen, get some ahas, because I know you're going to receive them. Inga's amazing. I know her well. All right. And I'm going to pull a card real quick. Just take a nice deep breath, close my eyes. The card that I pulled is raving reviews. My clients are so happy with the work that we do. They delightedly offer glowing testimonials. You know, it's really interesting. When you have gone through the kind of loss that Inga has gone through, the type of trauma that I have gone through, I call it the divine initiation. And when you know how to get out of that and you bring that to your clients, they cannot help but give you incredible reviews. You know, they cannot help but say, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. So that, to me, that's why this card is pulled today, because when we really get the transformation that we are to others, we stop being afraid of sharing our work with the world. All right, so without any further ado, I want to welcome Inga Christina. Inga had a devastating loss. I'm going to let her tell the story. I'm not going to, you know, share it all with you. But she works with women who've experienced powerful trauma, and they don't know how to move forward in their lives because of that overwhelming emptiness and the anguish of grief. She helps them find deeper meaning in their loss and to help them recover their hope and peace of mind. And let me tell you, there's nothing more sacred than that. She understands the power of devastating loss. She lost her own son at 11 years old to a brain tumor in 2005. And after healing her own grief, she realized how many others struggle to find that joy and peace again. She's since made it her mission to help them experience life, love, joy, and peace again. And, you know, her story is incredibly powerful, and I really want to hear how this came to be, you know, her work came to be from that loss. I don't think there's anything more devastating than losing a child, honestly. So, Inga, welcome, and thank you for bringing this, you know, sharing with us today. I know it, you know, like, I know you're in a different place than you were when that happened, but, boy, it, you know, tell us, you know, let us know, like, how in the heck did you get from there to here?
Hi, everyone. thank you for having me. Yeah, of course I am in a different place, and it's been a long journey. It started when my son was diagnosed with cancer. And in a way, I think that I was lucky, if you can say about the situation that you are lucky, that I had the time to prepare for losing him. Because after operation, we still had him for a year and a half, and most of that time was really, really nice time together. It hasn't been easy. Very transformational. He has been the greatest teacher in my life because he taught me much more about love and life and death.
Give me an example of how he taught you that. Mm-hmm. Like, was he, it sounds like he was just very present during the whole experience and present to love. And that's what I'm picking up. Without having gone through it myself, but that's sort of my vision of what you mean by that.
Yeah, he was a very bright boy. He brought lightness and joy and happiness around him. But at the same time, he was, I believe he was really old soul with lots of wisdom.
Yeah.
And he knew that he's going to go soon, that he's not going to, like, he never asked me, am I going to die?
Mm-hmm.
It's as if he knew.
Mm-hmm.
There was no resistance. And I believe that it was his choice
mm-hmm.
to go at that time. And there were times that I really struggled with my guilt about was I not a good enough mother, and my relationships with his dad, that I didn't manage to bring in love in those, and that was what he was craving for most.
Mm.
And during his last weeks, yes, there was lots of pain, and morphine didn't work all the time. Even at those times, to hear from him, I love you. And even when, like about 10 days before he died, I noticed that he was in a different world already. He was talking to somebody, and nodding and kind of yes, no. And I asked, whom are you talking to, I just... And he said, to God.
Mm-hmm.
And in Latvian, it is in Latvian, farewell sounds the same as to God when it's pronounced quickly. And so initially I thought that he's saying farewell, that he's going.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of distinguished those words, to God.
Mm.
And I asked, are you happy? And he said yes.
Mm.
So acceptance from his part of the journey, it was just amazing. It was very intense time in terms of sorrow,
mm-hmm.
grief, desperation. But it was intense time in terms of peace surrounding. Like sometimes I would just sit in his room next to him and close my eyes and tune into that peace, and it was amazing how such contradictory things can coexist.
Yes, I only imagine. You know, it's like being here on the earth, right? And yet we know the spiritual is unlimited, and you know, when we tune into it through meditation or whatever, we all is possible. And yet then we come up, we open our eyes, and we're back in you know, this earthly existence where we have the ego and the attachment and the limiting and the, you know, closed in body, all of that. I can well imagine that the two felt so different, and yet here you were walking with a foot sort of in both worlds. Experience of being a mother who is losing her child, and the experience of just pure, absolute love and peace and acceptance of the experience, the surrender, that divine surrender. So after he passed, you were in a space of a lot of grief, I would imagine, and loss. So how did you move from that back into a sense of hope and you know, real peace for yourself? Because it really is about letting go of an attachment to it should be a certain way, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, like my child should be growing up next to me. He should not have mm-hmm. died, right? So how do you move past that into a sense of all is well?
Well, it's grief journey is really a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You have those moments of when it seems there is full acceptance and peace, and then you have those moments when you just want to cry and shout and angry at everyone and everything. But I believe what helped me was my spiritual practices, like meditation and Qigong. And during his last months or two, when he was really ill, I didn't do formal practices, but I still had that from I still was able to be in that space.
Right.
So that really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe also that I had a willingness to feel better, to be better.
Mm-hmm.
Now I would say I had a vision for healing, and at that time I didn't have those words, but now when I reflect back, it's what it was. I wanted to be happy again. I wanted to live life again, because exactly as you said, his choice was to go. And I, during grief journey, I need to consider not only my feelings not only what I want, but what is his soul's journey.
Right, right.
He chose it for one reason or another, and our suffering, when we are into prolonged grief, actually really binds the soul who has passed to the earth plane, and they are not able to move forward into light. And I didn't want that for him.
So your love, again, moved him forward. That's so powerful. That's so powerful, Inga.
Mm.
Yeah. So what would you say to people who maybe, because I know that you work with people now who have lost loved ones, and not just, I know that you don't only work with people who've lost loved ones, but you also work with people who've dealt with trauma. I mean, I had a serious trauma in my own life, and it took me 2.5 years until I learned tapping. I was doing a lot of different work myself, but it wasn't really until the tapping came along that I was able to release it. And maybe because of the tapping, maybe because it did something different, I don't know. But I know that 2.5 years of darkness was, and suffering. Yes, it was my choice. Yeah, all that stuff. But even still, it was pretty awful. So what would you say to someone who's going through the trauma and how they can move past it? Because we'll get into the work part in a minute, but I'm really curious what you would say to someone about the feelings that they're experiencing right now, if they have recently experienced either loss or of some sort or trauma.
I believe that the first thing that people need to learn is acknowledging and accepting their own feelings, acknowledging that where they are, it's okay. And yes, it is devastating at times. But when we embrace that pain, there is kind of spaciousness created in heart space. And when pain is accepted, then we are able to let go, not when we resist it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
I believe we live in self-gratification and quick fixes searching society, but grief journey, it's not a quick fix. You cannot take a pill and not feel anything, even though many people would choose that option, like to get numb.
It's true. I just want to feel better, okay? Please, just like... the quicker, the faster, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do know that you have had, like, some of your clients, because I know you shared this with me, so I hope you don't mind if I'm not going to name anything, but I definitely want to share this. The people that you've worked with have, like, you had one person say, I feel better than I felt in 6 years. And I can remember the complete transformation that I experienced with the tapping. And I know you incorporate tapping as well in your work. And I know the incredible experience that I had with tapping and how it transformed my experience and my trauma, my loss. It was night and day difference. And so I would say, yes, it's not an overnight thing, but it really can be a lot easier a journey than we think it has to be, right? Would you agree with that when you actually start using some of these very powerful energy tools that you know about and have access to?
I absolutely agree, and I think if at that time when Aegis was ill and at that intense time of grieving when I was losing him. If I had tapping then, I probably would be in different space much quicker.
Yeah, I'll tell you, soon after I learned tapping, I unexpectedly lost my little sister, like a year later. And she died in a car accident on New Year's Eve. And it was such a surprise. And she was 33 years old. She was young. And this was in 2004. And I tapped every time I got triggered about it. And the difference for me in moving through the grief was astonishing, because I would feel it. I didn't resist it. I tapped, and I would feel it sort of like, you know how you feel like when you're tapping, you're like all intense, and then it just kind of like, you can feel the energy start to flow again. You know, it's like, you know, this whole spirit. Well, that's what it was like, and it was so, I guess, like 1 minute I'd be crying, and the next minute I'd be like, you know. I mean, she was gone. She was still gone, but I didn't hold on to the grief. I acknowledged it. I felt it, and I tapped through it, and it released very quickly. You know, and the grief experience was so much shorter because of that. It was pretty astonishing to me. I agree with you. I guess I'll by way of saying that I would 100% agree with you with that. So let's talk about how like the accumulation of even small traumas can have a devastating effect. What trauma really is and how it can have a devastating effect on our future if it accumulates. So let's talk about that, because I think that's a really powerful point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trauma or traumatic event is really any events or situation that is perceived as emotionally and psychologically overwhelming. It seems that it is life-threatening, that there is danger, that we are not able to cope. And it is a unique experience. So for somebody, what can be harmful in long term for one person might be just exhilarating for another. Like one person might have the same symptoms of trauma living through earthquake, and another having the same having a bad boss. Well, it's a bit exaggeration, but still. So it's unique to every person.
Mm-hmm. I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, and it's not the event itself, but our perception that determines whether it's traumatic or not. But of course, traumas with big T, like loss of loved one, severe childhood abuse, war, neglect, abandonment, they are commonly perceived as very traumatic. But then there are less obvious causes of traumas, and they can include ordinary events,
right?
That for some people they might not seem traumatic at all, like minor car accidents or being left alone, especially as kids, invasive medical procedures, illnesses, again especially as kids, being left alone in hospitals, for instance. Humiliating and deeply disappointing experiences like bullying at school. And the list can go on, especially what we might have experienced in childhood. And so these traumatic experiences can accumulate over time if they are not resolved, if they are not processed. And they can affect us in a way that we self-sabotage, we procrastinate, we engage into self-destructive behaviors, addictions. It takes toll on family relationships, impact health big time, and most of all, it prevents us from living fully, because when we perceive something traumatic happened, unconsciously or consciously, we make a decision to avoid places, to avoid people, to avoid experiences. So it really limits us. And Sarah,
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Sarah, different symptoms of trauma, starting from physical, like cold sweat and heart racing and eating disorders, sleeping disorders, some things that people can really recognize. Unexplained physical pains, skin disorders. And then there are emotional symptoms like dissociation, denial. There is a quote by Woody Allen that I like. He said, "I'm not afraid of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens." And I think that reflects our culture. We better avoid and push it somewhere in dark spaces where we don't see it.
I'm very interested in the whole conversation about traumas. I mean, we in our house we joke about, you know, getting traumatized over something, but it's very interesting. And I mean joking kind of lightly, but not really. I do think that trauma is such a huge part of our lives, and the little T traumas as well as big T. I mean, I know people who have been traumatized in big ways. And what's fascinating about it, and you know that I had actually specialized in helping people through trauma in my own work. When I was doing the tapping and the hypnosis and Reiki and all of that before doing the business coaching for healers, I was a healer. I still am a healer, I think. But, you know, my point being that was my specialty because I could see how one thing would affect others. You know, like one incident affects later on how we experience life, how we choose to live our lives. Those little traumas make a huge difference in the quality of our lives because we do start then going, you know, avoiding pain. You know, I can remember this one man who had lost a beloved dog, and this would still fall under, in my opinion, probably a little T, but it was still a beloved dog. And he had nursed it. He had done what I'm doing now with my cats, which was, you know, he had done a lot of geriatric care and nursed it. But then he didn't want to have another dog. He wouldn't open himself up to love. And you can think of all the dogs that need homes that could be loved, that, you know, he could have enjoyed, but he wouldn't do it because of the trauma that he had experienced. And it's like, you know, we do that as humans, unconsciously. And I was working with him, and I think at some point he did adopt a dog again. But it was, you know, his whole point was, no, it was too traumatic to lose him. He was so afraid of the loss that he couldn't open up to love. And I think that really is what the essence of trauma is. We get so afraid of being traumatized or the loss, we get so stuck in that past that we don't allow ourselves to experience the love for the future, you know, or the now even.
I absolutely agree. And just an incident came into my mind. Can I share it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
When I was in hospital with Aegis, my son, and he just was after operation. We were in the room where there was maybe 2 years old kid, And I was able to sleep in that room as well, stay overnight. And during the night, I suddenly woke up, and I don't know, it was definitely not a conscious conscious thought, but I woke up from the sounds that that small kid was like in his dreaming something bad or something like that. And I just, I felt overwhelmed by, I don't know, I love. And I started to laugh because I realized that even if you lose somebody, if you lose your own kid, there are so many opportunities in the world to give love.
Mm.
And I'm not saying it in a kind of in a way that you shouldn't grieve because there are so many opportunities to give others. Of course not. We grieve and we should grieve our what has been dear to us, but let's not close our heart.
Right, right, right. And it's, you know, I think that that's probably one of the big the big things that you do with people is help them not close their heart, because so human nature is, well, I'm not doing that again, and screw that person or whatever. Screw, mm-hmm. I'm not going down that road again. Maybe not screw somebody, but you know what I mean. They mm-hmm. just, it's easier and safer to just keep my heart closed so that I don't get hurt. And I think that's very common, a common reaction. And maybe we all go through it for a little bit, or at least to some degree. But I love the fact that you went through this very consciously, this loss. This whole trauma was a very conscious experience on your part. Let's talk about three ways that people can transform their trauma. And hang on one second. I think that okay. All right. I just saw a note from Elizabeth. I just want to sorry about that. We're fine. So let's talk about three ways that we can transform trauma and what to expect when you do actually transform it.
Mm-hmm. I believe that the most important thing is willingness to heal, willingness to live again, willingness to rebuild one's life.
Mm-hmm.
And
ooh, that's
it has
good.
To come,
that's good.
It has to come from within. No one can say another person to do that. After about 2 years after Edges died, I talked to a new friend here in the UK, and he said his aunt lost his husband 8 or 9 years ago and hadn't come in terms with that.
Mm.
And I remember my feeling of surprise combined even with horror, like, why would anyone do that to themselves?
Mm.
And I'm not the most loving person towards myself either, but it still touches me deeply when I hear how long people hold on to their grief.
Let me ask you a question, because this is really powerful. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's that they just don't know that they don't have to hold on to their grief?
It could be that, but it also, it might sound a bit harsh, but there are benefits for them in holding this grief,
okay.
To this grief. Maybe they get attention. It's not pleasant to stay in pain, but it's familiar. It gets comfortable. Like I've heard from a friend, she attended the grief support group, and she said there were people in that group who were going to meetings for 20 years after loss of a child, and they didn't want to hear anything that would help them to move forward, because it's so comfortable.
Interesting. I would think that that would be fewer rather than more people, you know, because I'm just thinking back to what I was going through, and I was like, I was definitely, oh, man, I'm just thinking about, you know, I always knew that there was some way out of the loss or out of the grief that I was feeling, and I think that there was, so let me just share my, a little bit of my journey was in July of 2000. Share this on the radio. July of 2000, it's not like it's any big news or anything. We discovered that my former husband, and not my daughter's father, was molesting her. And it was, she was 12 at the time. And so I was shocked and horrified that I had brought him into her life, right? And this family that I thought was wonderful was absolutely not. And there were, you know, there were all these little signs, but I didn't know that was what was going on. So we, you know, he was immediately out of the house. He was arrested. You know, this whole next 6 months was like in crazy world. And then in December of that year, it was revealed that he had a massive brain tumor. And that was what had caused his behavior, his deviant sexual behavior. So then we began, you know, this was this whole now, this new journey of just trying to come to terms with the fact that, you know, this was a physiological thing, cause, rather than a, you know, sort of character flaw, if you will. And then, but I was still left with all the devastation of what had happened with my daughter and I. And so we still had to deal with, you know, all of our feelings and all of the stuff that came up around everything. So, you know, from July of 2000 until December of 2002, I was a mess emotionally. And I was like it was a very deep dark night of the soul period. I was in grief. I would get triggered. I would go down the tubes. Just any little things would trigger me, and I would just cry, and I was a mess. And I'm thinking about it now, and thinking, well, was I even conscious that I was getting something from it, right? I mean, I knew I was angry. Let me tell you, I was so angry. I did not, this is kind of funny, but you know, when he found out that we had this brain tumor, like all of a sudden it was, oh, poor him, right? And oh my God, that's what caused it. And okay, well now he didn't have to take any responsibility for what he had done to my kid, right? And so then I was really angry about that. I was just angry, frankly. I mean, it was just like 2.5 years of anger, like, her. I just think about that. That time was so awful and so sacred because I was, and yet I knew on some level that I wasn't going to stay there. I wasn't going to be there the rest of my life, but I didn't know how to get out of it. I didn't, you know, it was like, what do you do, right? So that's when all of these different healing techniques came into my life. And I trained in this, and I trained in that, and I trained in something else. And they all helped, but they didn't, like, eliminate the... But then the tapping came in, and let me tell you, it was like night and day in one day, like all of the grief, all of the anger, all of the, you know, it was like completely... I felt reborn. I joke that I was like, you know, resurrected, because for 3 days, and this is just so funny, but like literally I walked around going, where is it? Where is all that? I just felt empty, like I'd been emptied out of all the anger and all of the grief. And I know that now that it was my energy readjusting. And at the end of that, like third day, I seriously woke up and I felt joy again. And I really, you know, it was like, wow, I'm like Jesus. I died and I was resurrected. and I had joy again, and I had hope again, and I had all of this. But I didn't, during that time, have an awareness that it could be any other way, or I didn't have an awareness of how I could get there. I just figured that somewhere, somehow, I would get to a different place of not feeling the pain and the anger, the sense of betrayal and the grief and all of that that I was feeling. It was such a different world. I just don't even know how to explain it, but I understand when you're in that space, if you don't know that there's another possibility, how can you ever even, I don't know, how can you know to look for something different if you're being told one thing? Does that mm-hmm. make, like, you know, these people at these support groups are being told one thing, you know, and they don't even know that there's another possibility out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get, you know, I got juice from it. You know, I got anger, and I, you know, it was part of my own grief journey, right? It was part of my own growth process. It was what I needed to go through to become who I became. But that's the trigger is what fueled me to find the pain was what triggered me to find a way out, because I was in so much pain emotionally. Mm-hmm. I was such a mess, Inga. I was such a mess. I mean, I remember that so clearly, just being so lost and not having the first idea of how to get out of it and heal. What was, oh, man, it was like I laid an egg there. Sorry about that. How would someone, let's just kind of move into a new question about that, but how would someone who seems to be unable to move forward, how would they get an inkling, would you say, that they would, you know, that it doesn't have to be like this? Do you think that it's like they finally hear there's an opening, someone says something, you plant a seed, it doesn't have to be like this, you can have it be different? I mean, do you know what I mean? Did we lose her? Inga, are you there? Uh-oh. Did we lose her? Inga? She looks like she's still on. Elizabeth? Hello? Is anybody there?
I believe the line may have dropped.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just...
Here she is. No, carry on.
So
oh, there you are, Inga.
I don't know what happened.
Oh, okay.
I was notified about something about card, but I don't know.
Inga's calling in from the UK because we had those problems and she was using her card. Do you have enough time on your card?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Oh, that's so funny. Okay.
They just wanted to let me know.
See, we had to have some divine humor in this. I love it. So I've totally lost what I was asking. What would you say, I know what it was. I was asking, when someone is in that space of grief and loss, and they've sort of gotten themselves into the comfort of the discomfort, right? The comfort of the loss. They're comfortable with that space, and how do they possibly, we should probably just move on from this conversation, but how can they even know what they don't know at that point? Do you know what I'm asking? Like, do you think that someone says they drop a seed and at some point it blossoms, like they get tired of being in that space?
I agree. Lots of times it can be unconscious choosing pain rather than healing. And tapping is one of the ways to really transform trauma. Another one is any kind of body work, because we first store all traumas in our body. So it can be any practice, like formal yoga practice or qigong or tai chi, or simply getting in touch with your body, like patting, tapping, not with two fingers like in emotional freedom technique, but like with a palm, tapping on your body, on head, shoulders, legs, just to release that energy. Then shaking, trembling, it sounds odd, but that's, for instance, how animals get out of traumas. They shake it off?
Yeah, they do. I watch the ducks. They get, you know, like somebody, you know, they'll have a hawk come fly through and they fly down to the lake and then they just shake it off. Or if they have a fight with another, go out into the lake and they'll shake it off. It's really fun to watch. You know, they do shake it off. That's funny. Yeah, that's good.
Anything really that would cultivate this body awareness and sensitivity. Walking, swimming, such kind of activities. And then there might come time when ahas come, for instance, with stepping, when you start to work with stepping, with what is in the present moment. I find that sooner or later we get to the core issue that caused that trauma, and then people get those ahas. Oh, that's why I behaved that way, or
right.
That's why I felt that way.
This is also where I call the angels in, too. It's like, you know, and I do think that the spiritual path that we have makes a huge difference. You know, whatever that, you know, understanding, I can remember during that Dark Night of Soul period, I read every book I could on healing and intuitive and past lives, and I can just remember reading everything I could get my hands on. So my intention was going out from the universe to heal. It was consistently going out to the universe to heal. I wanted to heal. I was very, very clear. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know where it was, but I knew that I wanted healing. I mean, I planted a garden. You remember that, you know, there was a lot of this inner journey that went on. So let's talk about how that, because I'm cognizant of the time here. Let's talk about how the loss and a trauma like this, which I like to call the divine initiation, brings you into the work that you have, that you ultimately do. For many of us, for many healers, many intuitives, it is this exact process that moves us into our divine work. Talk about that.
Mm-hmm. After Aegis died, I really felt the need and wanting to work with ill people. And I'm aware that partly it was because of my guilt that I wasn't able to save him, to take care of him. So I wanted somehow to compensate and go out in the world and give to others. Mm-hmm. But I was also very aware of that I'm not able to help others if I'm not healed myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was conscious of not bringing my own pain if I worked with somebody else. That's why I guess it took quite some time for me to step into this particular work.
Yeah. Well, how could it not, right?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's part of this very sacred journey. I don't think it's an immediate. Although, let me just change that. It was immediate for me. That moment or that day or that weekend, whatever, was so powerful for me that I was like, oh, my gosh, I've got to share this with everybody I know. I just like immediately went out and started like, you know, using it on everybody I could. And my daughter was like, do not tap on me. She was 15 at the time. She was like, no, you're not doing that. I felt like this evangelist. It's kind of funny. But I, you know, when I started working with people, they would have these incredible transformations, and so it was, you know, I definitely learned as I went along. But it was a very quick. I'd already done all that other work. Not all that other work. Let me just change that. I'd done a lot of certifications. I'd done a lot of trainings. I'd done a lot of deep inner work, healing inner work, and the tapping was sort of like for me, what ultimately transformed everything. And it was like the icing on the cake, so to speak. So I, you know, for me, it was definitely almost a quickie thing, an immediate, you know, moving right into my work then. I want to have everybody have time to hear what your gift is, to see if there's anything else that you want to cover with this, because I do think that our work is divinely given. We are called to do that work, and it's in our hearts, but a lot of times we're afraid to say yes to it because we're afraid of what people will think or afraid of just fill in the blank. You know, there's so many fears that come up. How do you suggest that people move past those fears to actually bring their work into the world?
May I mention also two other ways to transform trauma?
And oh,
that
yeah.
I believe that will cover this as well. One very powerful tool is meditation, I believe. And there are lots of different techniques and all of that, but it can be very simple, like people sitting and focusing on their breathing. So it's really both with meditation and body work and tapping. It's about paying attention, and it's about being interested. It's about being raising awareness of our being, of what's going on in our bodies, hearts, minds. And then another aspect which I think is very, very important is developing self-love, cultivating self-love. Because so often we, especially women, we are willing to move mountains to make others happy, family, husbands, partners, kids, friends. Are we willing to move mountains to make ourselves happy, to do what nourishes us, to do what inspires and uplifts us? Just a week or so ago, I read a book, Love Yourself as If Your Life Depends on It. And it's a small book, but it's very profound and simple message, love yourself. And there was a question. If I truly and deeply loved myself, what would I do? And I think that's a great question to ask when we especially when holiday season is approaching, and we feel that we need to go out and socialize, maybe even if we don't want to, like do something that other people, that there is this pressure from society, and then we really should tune in and find out what is the best for me right now, and to give ourselves permission to do what is the best. Like, is it staying at home when everybody else is at party, or going to the party when I'm not in a way supposed to? It's about giving yourself permission to do things that bring peace and avoid those that enhance anxiety and stress.
Yes. I love that. I think that's probably one of the most powerful and profound things we can do for ourselves. That truly is self-love. Doing things that bring peace and avoid anxiety. And let me just say, sometimes stretching beyond our comfort zone is anxious. You know, we get anxious when we're stepping into something new. So it's how can I bring peace even while I'm doing this? Like, so for example, if you are listening to the calling of your heart and creating a business, sometimes it can be very uncomfortable. And so you can't always do things that avoid anxiety. All right, so Elizabeth led me to, we need to get, our time is very, very short. So Inga, mm-hmm. share what your gift is, the 10 ways to...
10 ways trauma can transform your life.
Nice.
And
where can people...
my ebook.
And where can people find
that? People can find it on my webpage, www.traumatotransformation.com.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. 10 ways trauma can transform your life, www.traumatotransformation.com. Inga, thank you so much for being here today. What a powerful...
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. It was such a powerful conversation. Next week we have Jessica Brace Carter, who will be joining us, talking with us about how you can avoid video mistakes, the 5 essential videos your business needs, and lots more. So today, know that you are here to bring your divine gifts into the world. You are here to share your love with the world in the way only you can. Honor it. Create ways that you honor yourself, that you share your love with not only others, but with yourself. Being connected with the divine, doing things that bring you joy. Know this to be true. Take it into the world. Take gifts into the world. Thank you for joining us here today, everyone. Go get your divine on. We'll see you next week. Bye.
This episode of the Divinely Intuitive Business Show has been sponsored by the Divine Business Club, the only place where divine intuitives like you can get proven business building advice on how to get your sacred gifts out into the world and make the impact and the money that you want to make for less than $1 a day. For more information, go to www.divinebusinessclub.com.